Hi, and welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. Today we're going to look at probationary periods, also known as trial periods, which many employers use to assess new employees over a defined period of time before confirming their position. I'm joined today by Senior Employment Law Editor Susie Munro, who's going to talk us through how employers can use probationary periods effectively and also what to do where you decide that a new employee just isn't meeting the required standard. So Susie, once the employer has recruited a new starter, what does it need to do to get the most out of that probationary period?
So the key thing is that everyone, so the employee, their line manager and anyone else supervising them, must be clear about the purpose of the probationary period and how it will work in practice.
And the best way of ensuring that is to have it in writing. So that could be in the employee's contract of employment.
Yes, so because there are no specific statutory rules around probationary periods and employees on probation don't have any special status, the probationary period is governed by what's in the contract of employment. So as a minimum, the contract should set out the length of the probationary period and give the employer the option to extend it where necessary. Although it should be drafted so that the employer retains the right to terminate the employment before the end of the probationary period, say if misconduct or capability issues warrant dismissal.
And if only the minimum detail is provided in the contract, it could also be supplemented by a letter to the employee setting out more detail.
Yes.
So looking at the contract then, the employer can specify different contractual rights during the probationary period, can't it?
Yes, for example, it could provide for a shorter notice period for both parties. So if it's clear that the employee isn't suitable or they decide that the job isn't for them, no one's tied in to the longer notice period. Also, the contract could provide that employees only have access to certain benefits, for example, contractual sick pay, once the probationary period has been successfully completed. So the benefits could be more generous then.
So what other paperwork should the employer prepare?
It's useful to have a clear plan for the probationary period, and this could be in the letter to the employee that supplements the contract. It should spell out the expectations and responsibilities on both sides, so the training that the employer will provide and the objectives that the employee will be expected to meet.
So should the employer actually set out targets for the new employee during the probationary period?
It's up to individual employers how specific they want to be in terms of setting out expectations. So it would depend on the nature of the role, but they should find some way of clearly defining what the employee is expected to achieve by the end of the probationary period. So defining the skills and standards of performance that they're expected to demonstrate and the development activities they must complete. And it should include some quantifiable job-based targets.
So having task-based targets will help the employee to be able to focus on what's expected of them at an early stage. And it's also worth setting out, isn't it, the consequences of not meeting those required standards?
Yes, so the probationary period could be extended or the employee could be dismissed if there are serious issues and the employer concludes that the employee won't be able to meet the required standard, even with additional training and support.
So there are a number of steps that employers should take at the very beginning of employment to ensure that the employee knows the standards he or she is required to meet and that this is recorded. So moving on to the practicalities once the period has started, the employer has to ensure that it's providing the employee with the supervision and support that they need.
Yes, the employer needs to have allocated responsibility and resources for the appropriate supervision of the new employee, and training for line managers in how to manage an effective probationary period will be key.
And having a defined probationary period helps to focus the mind of the new employee's line manager, and it gives a framework within which performance or conduct issues can be addressed as soon as they arise.
Yes, otherwise the line manager could be tempted to put off dealing with the issues and maybe just hope that they will go away on their own, whereas it's more likely that the longer poor performance is left unaddressed, the harder it will be to resolve. So the employee may not be aware that they're not meeting the required standards, or they may get into bad habits that they might later find it more difficult to get out of.
So in practical terms, what should an employer do to make sure any performance or conduct issues are picked up early on?
The employer's probation procedures should provide for a mix of regular informal feedback and formal progress reviews. Employers might find it useful to have an assessment form to use during formal review meetings, which the employer and the employee can use to assess the employee's performance against previously set objectives, identifying where the employee is doing well and where there are areas where they need to improve.
And it's important as well, isn't it, to give positive feedback?
Yes, so while the main purpose of the probationary period is to identify whether or not the employee is going to be able to perform well in the role and to address any problems or barriers, if the employee is doing well, it's good to have a formal way of recognising this. Also, I think it's important for line managers to be realistic, not to expect the new employee to be perfect, and to get that message across to the employee as well. So any criticism should be delivered in a constructive way.
Absolutely. But where there are specific areas where improvement is needed, what should the manager do?
They should discuss this openly with the employee, make sure that they're aware of what's required and how they're not currently meeting those standards. And it would help to provide specific examples from the employee's work of where things could be improved. They should discuss the possible reasons for not meeting the required standards and whether there's any specific training that the employee needs, or there might be other things that are outside the employee's control that are contributing to the issues, like a lack of resources or too heavy a workload that the employer should address. Employers should also remember to have a more general discussion at progress review meetings about how the employee is settling in and to provide an opportunity for them to ask any questions or raise concerns that haven't otherwise been discussed.
And paperwork is going to be really important here as well. So the employer should make sure it's got a record of what's been discussed at a review meeting and what actions have been agreed.
Yes, any areas where the employee needs to improve should be recorded, along with an action plan for what the employee and employer are going to do to address this. And this should include a time frame for any actions to be taken.
So if at the end of the probationary period, the employee still hasn't met the required standards, just talk us through what the employer should be doing.
So just before the expiry of the probationary period, the employer should hold a final review meeting with the employee. And the options open to the employer are to confirm the employee in post, or if they think that additional training and coaching could help the employee to reach the required standard, the employer may decide to extend the probationary period. Or, of course, the employer could decide that the probationary period has shown that the employee just isn't suitable for the role and could dismiss them.
And what procedure should the employer follow if it intends to dismiss the employee?
Well, it's unlikely that the employee will have 2 years' service unless they were placed on a probation period, having transferred from a different role within the organisation. So they wouldn't be able to claim ordinary unfair dismissal, but the employee could still claim unfair dismissal for one of the automatically unfair reasons where they wouldn't need 2 years' service, for example, maternity or whistleblowing. So to avoid the risk of a tribunal claim, the employer should follow a fair dismissal procedure and of course give the employee the notice required under their contract.
Just going back to extending the probationary period, which you touched on previously, in what kinds of situations might that be appropriate?
So it should only be extended in exceptional circumstances where the employer needs more time to assess whether or not the employee will be able to perform the job well. It could be that they are undertaking some training and have shown that there's real potential for improvement, or it could be that the employee has been absent for a significant part of the probationary period and it hasn't been possible for the employer to properly assess their performance.
So if the employee has been off on sick leave, for example, for a large part of their probationary period, should the employer be automatically extending the probationary period?
No, because it might be possible to assess them on the work that they have done. So it should only be extended if they haven't been at work for long enough for an assessment to be made, or where they've not achieved the required standard when they have been at work, but because of their sickness absence, they haven't had the opportunity to improve.
And in that situation, the employer should bear in mind that their performance issues may well be connected to their sickness absence, shouldn't they?
Yes, so it could be that the employee has had an illness or condition that's prevented them from performing as well as they otherwise could. And obviously, employers also need to be aware of the risk of disability discrimination. And you can look at this in two ways. So it could be said to be a positive step to extend the probationary period, to give them the chance to improve their performance. And that's obviously preferable to simply being dismissed. But on the other hand, not being confirmed in the job as a result of disability-related absence could be seen as discrimination arising from disability or possibly a failure to make reasonable adjustments. So there could be a risk of a claim, particularly if the employee is missing out on more generous contractual benefits that are only available on completion of the probationary period.
And the same would apply, wouldn't it, where an employee was not able to complete her probationary period in the set time because she went on maternity leave, and there's a risk of discrimination if she was to be treated unfavourably because of her absence on maternity leave.
Yes, or if an employee was absent due to pregnancy-related sickness. There's no definite answer to this one, but employers should bear in mind that probationary periods don't have any particular status in law. The employee doesn't get more rights or a different status on passing their probation. So if the employer decided to confirm someone in post, even though disability or pregnancy-related absence or maternity leave had interrupted their probationary period, that wouldn't prevent the employer from continuing to address any ongoing performance or conduct issues, or any that subsequently arise, then that could be done using the organisation's normal disciplinary or capability procedures.
And we focused a lot on where there are problems uncovered during the probationary period, but hopefully most of the time the employee will perform well and will be confirmed in the job without the need for an extension. So if that's the case, what do employers need to be aware of?
I think it's worth saying that employers need to make sure that they don't overlook informing the employee that the probationary period has been successful. If there have been no issues and the employee has been performing the job well for a while, it could be easier for the manager to stop seeing him or her as a probationer and to overlook the final stage of the process. So either the manager or the HR department needs to be responsible for a letter to the employee, and possibly a meeting as well, confirming them in the role and acknowledging their successful contribution to the organisation. And if there are different contractual terms and conditions on completion of probation, this should be confirmed in writing. So, for example, if there's access to a season ticket loan or a longer notice period.
Thanks very much, Susie, for that very helpful overview. And if you're wondering where to start in preparing the paperwork that Susie mentioned, have a look at our model policies and documents on probation, which you'll find in the recruitment section. And there's more detail in our how-to guide as well. And that brings us to the end of this week's podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We're back again next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.